Many people in our food community have been seriously impacted by Superstorm Sandy, and our hearts go out to them. At HRN, we've been covering these stories since the storm hit. To learn more, visit our website at www.heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, world. Welcome to episode 2 of Foment About It. On heritageradionetwork.com, we are live every Monday night at 7 p.m.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Guzmi. This is a podcast of all things fermentable.
With a particular interest in home brewing.
Last week, you heard us talk about the very basics of beer, how to make, and Mary laid down a very basic recipe for an extract brew. Today, we have a guest in the house, Zach Kinney from the New York City Home Brewers Guild.
Hi, guys.
who's going to talk us a little bit about brew in a bag method and things. How you doing? How was your day, Zach? Just walking into the studio now, right on time.
Got here. Smells good in here, man. I feel like I want some pizza.
we are live out of Roberta's in Bushwick. They have excellent pizza. Amazing.
The aromas are tantalizing. It definitely makes me both hungry and thirsty. Beer. Well, today's good. Today is getting better now that I'm here to talk about beer.
Well, we're very glad you're here. Absolutely. But first, there are a couple quick announcements about things going on, homebrew related.
Yeah, so if you're in New York City or the Tri-State area, the first thing I want to announce is the Sean Torres of Poor Standards. That's the Richmond County Homebrew Society over in Staten Island. He has put together a benefit, a homebrew benefit to help some victims of Sandy. So it's called Pour to Restore. It's going to be held on December 23rd from noon to 4. And it's basically New York City homebrewers are uniting to benefit the SIUH Employee Benefit Fund. It's going to be on Bay Street on Staten Island. I think they have all the homebrew slots, but tickets are available, I believe, on Brown Paper Tickets. The tickets are $30. All proceeds will benefit the SIUH Employee Relief Fund. And you'll if you buy a ticket, you'll be able to enjoy about 20 different homebrewers from homebrewers all over New York City, Jersey, and Westchester County.
And this is all relief from Hurricane Sandy, which hit a lot of people. And Zach, you actually lost power for that week, didn't you?
It was dramatic. We were stuck out in San Francisco for a wedding that turned into a 6-day extra vacation. But the East Village was dark. It was bizarre when we finally got home. Surreal. And I know Staten Island in particular was hit really hard. So I think it's awesome that the homebrewers are uniting to do this. Luckily, my beer...
That's my next question.
I got home. It had already been carbonated. It was in the keg. You know, the first pour was a little dicey. You know, I kind of threw that one out.
What did you have? What do you have? What do you have fermenting, and what's in the keg?
What I had on tap, which I think is now almost gone, was a Belgian Patters beer, which is kind of like a Belgian single. It's a style that we don't see very often here in the States, but Duvel is kind of famous in Belgium for making this version, and they've released the green, which is kind of like that. It's a lighter strength version of their Golden Strong, their classic golden ale. So it's really crisp, dry Pilsner malt, the classic Duvel yeast. So it's still got a lot of that flavor driving the that yeast driving the flavor.
And how old is it? Or how long do you take for your potter to be?
This potter was this father, which means father. Father's beer, I believe, is the literal translation of it. My father's beer was fermented in the primary for 3 weeks and a little under 3 weeks, and then I cold crashed it to try and kind of clarify it a little bit, but it's tough with that yeast strain. It doesn't want to flock out. It just hangs around. But it's a style of beer that's it's okay if it's a little cloudy. And again, that yeast definitely adds character and aroma in a really interesting way. So another 4 or 5 days of that at, you know, pretty cold temperatures, you know, close to freezing, and then rack that, force carbonated it, and luckily it was still drinkable. The bulk of the keg was still there.
We're glad you're back, and yes. Glad the beer is safe.
Survived.
And again, that there is actually a website for this event. It's www.pourtorestore.com.
Come check it out.
Please check it out. Please support it. The benefits are people need it and help in your way. Drink for good.
Yeah, and Chris and I think are scheduled to pour one of our beers
yes,
there.
We are.
So that'll going. Be a lot of fun.
And I'm going to brew another Patter's beer, so come check it out. Now that I've told you all about it, come try it. It'll be good.
The only other thing is I was lucky enough to go to Brooklyn Brew Shop's introduction of their winter kits. So they have 4 new winter kits. The first is a smoked wheat, and that was actually my favorite. I'm a huge lover of smoked beers, something that we'll be covering in a future episode. But that's just a lovely, lovely beer. A wheat base with some smoked character, very drinkable, great for fall. Really, this you could drink this any time of the year. They also have a chestnut brown ale, a bourbon double, and a rye PA or rye pale ale. So those are the 4 new brew kits for winter time from Brooklyn Brew Shop.
And Brooklyn Brew Shop does, I mean, if you're living in a city, they do really small kits. Like if you're troubled with the amount of space that you have, this is a 1 gallon kit. And you know, I mean, there's a lot of argument on why not to brew 1 gallon kit because it's the time is the same, but if you have the space to do it, these are great introductory ways.
Yes, and it is a little faster. Come on.
No.
And these are actually they retail. Erica and Steven are great. They're the founders of the company and still run it. And they retail awesome. Actually all over the country. So you can find them at Whole Foods as well as your independent brew shop. So if you're that's a great way to get into brewing.
And speaking of urban brewing and brewing in small places, most brewing is actually, you know, you have 3 pots. You have a hot liquor tank, a mash tun, and a brew pot. But there's a way to get rid of all 3 kettles and do it in just 1 kettle. You can do everything in your brew pot by basically making a giant beer tea. If you can make tea, you can make beer. We talked about it. If you can make oatmeal, you can make beer. And what is the brew in a bag method?
So I'm going to introduce this even further by talking about what got me started. So I recently moved in with Cruz Kuzme, so I have a brew slave at all times now. But before that, I was living by myself, and I was brewing in my backyard. And unfortunately, I was doing traditional all-grain brewing, but I would end up with, you know, 6.5 gallons of wort on the patio floor, and I'd have to lift it up to on top of my burner, which was actually on top of a table. And I physically was not strong enough to pick up 6.5 gallons of wort by myself.
It's heavy. It's heavy.
Yeah. So I'd have to have my neighbor or have to have somebody there to help me. And it was really frustrating. So I read about this brew in a bag method, which originated in Australia. I read about it online, and it was my solution because you do everything in one pot. There was no I could eliminate that step where I had to lift that heavy brew pot onto my burner. I could just start on the burner and stay there. So that's originally what got me interested. What got me hooked is that A, it makes absolutely fantastic beer. And B, it's a lot faster and much easier cleanup. So then rewind, I think I've been doing brew in a bag for at least 1.5 years now. Maybe 2 years.
At least 1.5 years. I think I started brewing with you 1.5 years ago, and I'm a recent convert. I was like, no way, that can't be good. You can't be getting good beer that I do this. You're missing a whole big step in here. And, you know, but I'm floored. It's awesome. It saves time off your day. It is incredibly easy, and it's great simplifying the way to make great beers through this method. It's pretty awesome.
And it's tasty.
And it's tasty. And what kind of things do you – what are the major differences – you know, let's go into it.
So, Zach, also, how long have you been doing brew in a bag?
I've been doing brew in a bag for a little over 2 years now. I started out as an extract brewer here in New York City and, you know, wanted immediately, as, you know, most brewers, you know, do, to get to that all grain, you know, plus place and the flexibility and the opportunities to use different ingredients in different ways, more control, more creativity. But small apartment, it's hard. So just like Mary, I looked at this as a, you know, my older brother, who's also a home brewer, he'd kind of started about 2 weeks before me doing Brunabag, and he immediately was like, you want to do all grain, this is the way to do it. And the biggest difference, I think, as Mary has outlined, is the saving of space mm-hmm. in the brew day, which ultimately also leads to saving time. You know, I feel like I'm probably cut at least an hour, if not more, versus what I would spend using three vessels.
So we're skipping a kind of an episode here insofar as, you know, last week we talked about extract brewing. And we did not talk really about the all-grain brewing. What is the process? Or partial mash. So, which we will later, but just quickly for the purpose of this episode, what is the step you're skipping?
So, in Brunabag, you don't have to... Well, first of all, you don't have to transfer it as to any vessels. You stay in the same vessel. And you don't sparge. Now, I will tell you that I've started doing a modified sparge, but it's very short, and that will save you. I mean, I used to sparge for at least 45 minutes on my regular 5 gallon batches, and that's where you rinse the grain.
Yeah, that's so. If in a traditional all grain system, you know, you start with heating water, and then your first step is really the mash, and that's what in an extract brewer you skip. You know, you start with the pre-mashed extract, mm-hmm. the sugars that have all been condensed down in either liquid or powder form, and you skip this all-grain step of mashing. The mashing is where you're essentially, you know, I'm oversimplifying this, but you're extracting the sugars and the enzymes and the various proteins and starches, all that good stuff that makes beer, from those grains into a liquid form. That's the mash. In order to do that, there's sort of two steps in there. One is the actual soaking of the grains, and then the other step is called the sparge, where you're rinsing the grains.
Right. So you want to rinse it. So most brewers, including home brewers, in a traditional all-grain setup, will rinse their grains, which is called sparging. As I said, usually I used to do it for at least 45 minutes. It takes an additional, some kind of hot liquor tank where you're storing your hot water. And then you have this mash tun where your grains are resting, and you're rinsing. There's a number of ways that you can sparge, but we're eliminating all that in Brunabag. So you're starting in your brew kettle and you're finishing in your brew kettle. It's hard to describe this on the radio, I think, a little bit, but we actually have a website now. It's fermentaboutit.com, and I have posted 9 photos. Actually, I don't know. I think it's still in draft form, but I'm going to publish it as soon as I get a chance to. So this will kind of give you some guides. We also have some really helpful links. Other blogs that have done it, some instructional sites. I even have linked to a guy who makes the bag. So let's start about how you do this. Actually, do we need to take a break yet?
We got 2 minutes.
2 minutes. So let's start. We'll start with what you need. So this is what you need for brewing a bag.
Here's your shopping list. Go.
Okay. You need a brew kettle. Typically, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, but I like to do smaller batches. I'm a 2.5 gallon girl. Kuzme is a diehard 5 gallon at least.
I like to drink it.
Goes too quickly.
I like sharing it more. Yeah.
That's true. Typically, if I'm doing a 2.5 gallon brew in a bag, the minimum size brew pot you'll need is a 5 gallon. I'll tell you that you have to watch for boil overs with that. It's a little tight, but you can do it. I think ultimately a 6 gallon would be good. And then I have a 10 gallon pot. We have a 10 gallon pot that we use now for our 5.5, 6 gallon. Batches. So you start with your brew kettle. You're gonna need a colander or some kind of false bottom, because you need to keep your brew bag off the bottom when the heat is on, because you don't want to scorch your grain. So you need a colander or some kind of false bottom just to keep the bag off the bottom.
Something metal, something that you know, wire, like oven racks that are mm-hmm. sort of tall enough. You know, there's a lot of different. The colander works great. If you can find a nice stainless steel metal colander that's about the same width as your brew kettle, that.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I found my colander on the sidewalk as I was walking home from the subway one day, but it totally works. So then also, I think a measuring stick is very helpful. So when you get your brew pot, we basically just took a dowel rod, and we gradually added, I think, either a half gallon or a gallon at a time, and you want to mark your dowel rod. We just used a permanent marker, but you could notch it out with a knife as well, and that'll give you an idea of how, as you're boiling this down, because with a brew in a bag, you're going to start with your full volume mm-hmm. of water. You don't have to worry about it. That's what everyone's like, oh, you got to, you know, do all these calculations. But you don't. I mean, I've boiled off a little bit too rapidly and added more water.
You can always adjust and route.
So we do have to take a break now. So we look forward to speaking to you more after the break. You're listening to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to My Used to Be by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Since the inception of the Heritage Turkey Project, more than 10 of Frank Reese's partner farms have converted to Good Shepherd from a corporate system whose weak protocols on husbandry, welfare, and genetics necessitated the use of subtherapeutic antibiotics at all stages of production. When Frank Reese started in 2002, he hatched 900 eggs in his barn. This year, 20,000 eggs were hatched. This is an enormous victory for sustainable agriculture and biodiversity. For more information and to order your Heritage Turkey today, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It.
Ferment About It.
I'm broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York, son. All right. Where were we? We're in the middle of brewing in a bag, I believe.
Yeah.
Are we still in the bag? Have we gotten out of the bag?
We have not gotten out of the bag. All right. So those are the basic things. You want a brew kettle, a colander, something to keep your bag off the bottom, a measuring stick, basic brewing stuff. You want a thermometer, etc. And then most importantly, you need a bag. So I actually sew. So I made bags for all my pots. And I think, Zach, you had somebody sew on for you,
right? I have my mom. I'm not even going to be embarrassed to admit that. Full disclosure. My mom knows how to sew. I'm, lucky if I can do a button. So she got some old sheer curtain material. You just want something with a really fine mesh. Mm-hmm. And she made me a bag. She even made two, so I have a spare.
I'm supposed to make one for Mary. I lost one of hers doing it on a brewing expedition. Tried to teach myself to sew, and it didn't work as well as I had hoped.
So I would say, listen, if you don't sew or don't have a relative that sews, ask around. You can barter your homebrew for sewing trade, I'm sure. Otherwise, there is a guy online. The blog post is up, actually. Well, it will be. And you can buy them online as well. You can also, some people use like paint straining bags.
Yeah, I've heard people have good luck with the 5-gallon paint strainer bag from Home Depot. And, mesh, can vary a lot depending on the materials. And, worst case scenario, if the mesh is a little too loose, you can always double the bag up.
That's correct. Yeah.
Sometimes buying one from somewhere that's around the block is easier.
A few other tips. So the cool thing about this, you can actually grind your grain very fine. So we have a mill. We grind our own grain. Otherwise, just ask your homebrew shop. If you have your grain milled, ask at your homebrew shop, wherever you buy your grain, for them to mill it a little bit more fine, which is great because that's a good way to get your extraction up. And it's all being captured in the bag. So here's the basics. You heat your water to strike temperature. It's going to depend on your brew system, how fast you boil away. Every stove is different. Obviously, brewing in a propane burner is very different than brewing on your stove. but you're probably going to start with 30 to 50% more than your end volume. Like I said, I wouldn't worry about it. I've added, look, if you have to add a half gallon of water at some point, if you realize you're boiling down too fast, that's totally fine. It's no big deal.
No big deal.
Nah. So then you're going to, once you're at mash temperature, you want to go ahead and put your bag around your pot. I just secure mine with bungee cords. It's pretty easy. And then you want to add your grain slowly. And because your grain is a little more finely ground, you add it slowly and stir it in. I think I've got a picture online of a friend of mine helping me. Because you want to avoid getting dough balls. And it is very easy, especially depending what kind of grain you're using, to get dough balls. So
going
stir
back
slow.
Real quick, why are you securing it around the edge?
Because you don't want it to fall into water and then, you know.
Yeah, that can get messy.
Yeah, it would be. Yep. That would be the worst thing to happen to a brew and a bag brewer.
And so, to be clear, you want it
would all fall
so that
out
the bottom rests on the colander or whatever you've done, but nothing folding down the sides of it. And so you're securing it at the top to make sure that nothing in the bag goes down to the bottom.
Yeah. So all the grain is enclosed in the bag. And this bag needs to be. It really should be, your kettle should be able to fit in this bag. You want it to be loose so that there's plenty of water circulation around your grain. So basically, once your grain is added and stirred in, you made sure you don't have any dough balls, you're at the correct mash temperature that you're going for, you basically just mash. I usually mash for 70 minutes. I will wrap, if I do it on stovetop, I'll wrap towels around it, securing them kind of in the bungee cords, put a towel on top.
Any kind of insulation, you're trying to maintain a relatively consistent temperature. I mean, again, give or take. It is home brewing, so, don't get too OCD about it.
And, I mean, they say that most of your conversion starts is done in the first 20 minutes anyway. Yep. So those are the most important after that. I mean, check your temperature. I usually stir once.
I do too.
I mean, if for some reason it's really cold in my apartment, then I can hit it with some heat, removing the towels first so I don't start a fire, which almost happened.
Another story.
Yeah. I'm a very laissez-faire brewer. But anyway, so that's your mash at the end. I take the towels off. I go ahead and try to get to mash out temperature. I think it does help to make it more viscous. It just makes the whole solution more viscous. Then
what temperature would you do mash out temperature?
About 168.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually aim for that too. And, sometimes I let it sit. Sometimes I just kind of pause for a moment and just go.
Yeah,
and you'd get there by heating up the bottom.
Yes,
exactly.
We're on the kettle. We're in the boil kettle.
Exactly. Yep. You haven't moved your kettle from that heat source. And again, this is where it is really key that you have that metal, some sort of barrier between the bottom of the kettle and your grain bag, because direct heat will melt a bag very quickly, and then you've lost all of your grain.
Yeah. So after that, you want to lift this bag of grain out. If it's a lower alcohol beer, you're not going to have a problem. If it's higher, you might need some help. Some people, hook up some kind of pulley system. If you have two of you, then there's no problem. You can do it. And then I usually slip either. Actually, a perforated pizza pan is awesome for this, because you want something so that you don't have to hold the grain. And actually, for my smaller batches, I use the outside of a springform, like a cheesecake pan, that ring. I use that. I take my bag of grain. I pull my bag of grain out. Chris will put the perforated pizza pan on top of the brew kettle, and
yes,
then the spring form.
Since we got a bigger kettle, we've actually been taking the oven rack out of the
right.
oven.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about
that. And then putting the pizza thing on
we
the
We clean
on
it
the
first. Thing. We clean it first.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course, of course.
Sure.
And, when we feel like it. when we're done doing this, we clean it. No, and then, so that makes sure that, we have that ledge to put the.
Yeah, it just makes it a lot easier for you in the long run. Then we let that drain. I will tell you that
into the kettle.
Yeah, draining into your brew kettle. I found that half-assed sparge is perfectly fine to do. I mean, I'll heat water. We've done it, so we heat water on the stovetop. We've done it, so we're just adding tap water. It doesn't matter. It just seems, but a little bit of rinse will get your efficiency even higher. And I'll tell you, actually. So
we did one. We were trying to make a mild, instead of just putting it into normal tap water or like warm water, like we ended up heating some water in our old brew kettle, and we took the whole tea bag or whole brew in a bag thing, and we dipped it into this other thing and just kind of let that, and then we took that second kettle and poured it into the original kettle to get to our volume, and also that had a bunch of great sugar water. It was basically like a second running kind of thing.
And we ended up,
it was an imperial mild.
Yes, an imperial mild. So these are all adaptations. You can do what you feel comfortable with. There's lots of options here, and there's no right and wrong. That's the most important thing to keep in mind.
Totally.
So basically, after you're done, you just you know, compost or dispose of your grain. I mean, it's much easier cleanup because you're just, you know, emptying out that bag and rinsing that bag. And then you just go on with your boil as you would for a normal brew. You know, I think some of the pros and cons, you know, when I first started looking at doing brew in a bag, you know, there were people like, oh, you don't get as good of extraction, you're not getting very good yield, you'll get cloudy beer. That none of that has happened. Yeah. I mean, I've made crystal clear beers with this method, no problem.
And you haven't had any stuck mashes at all with, like, you've done all rye or
we made 100% rye beer, no problem.
Now, these grains tend to be very sticky, and you can often have a problem when it's filtering out in a normal procedure where you're not, you know, everything just kind of gets stuck together and you're not getting any liquid or you're not getting a wort out of the bottom because of the filter bed just getting clogged up. Mm-hmm. But that's never been an issue with the brew in the bag.
It works great. It gives you all of the advantages of recipe formulation and the creativity of crazy ingredients or, excuse me, of a variety of ingredients and saves time as well. I mean, it's a pretty awesome mm-hmm. system, I think. You know,
save time. It's great for urban environments where you don't have the storage room for three kettles or, you know, mashed on hot liquor tank in a kettle.
Right. You only need a brew kettle and a bag. I mean, it's very, very easy.
Super easy. You can even just take your bag and go over to your friend's house, and you can do it there. You know, it's portable. You know,
that's why I lost Mary's bag.
Yeah, as long as you remember to bring it.
That's
home.
How I learned to sew.
So we're going to talk. We only have a couple minutes left, unfortunately, but we did. So Chris and I made a Jamaica Pale Ale with hibiscus flowers. We actually brought some really nice.
Smuggled
Jamaica flowers from Mexico. We our vacation in Mexico. We brought these really just plump. Jamaica flowers, or Jamaica flowers, also known as hibiscus. So we made a smash pale ale, very basic recipe, single malt, single hop, you know,
Northern
I think,
brewer,
American ale yeast, very easy. And we let that ferment. And then when we kegged it, we made a tea with the Jamaica flowers, and added that at kegging. And the reason we did that is because I feel like a lot of times you can add things in towards the end of the boil, at flame out, in secondary, but I feel like there is a place for bottling and or kegging with your secondary ingredients.
I absolutely agree. I think it gives you so much more control and mm-hmm. an ability to balance the flavor component that you're adding.
That's one reason why we threw that in here, because one of our favorite beers of Zach's is a habanero IPA, where he uses this method. What do you do when you make your habanero IPA?
Not radically different. I mean, I've tried it a number of different ways. What gives me the best results is a sort of a combination of dry habaneroing, where I take a whole habanero, slice and dice it roughly with my dry hops, let that sit. But usually what really gives me the fine-tuning ability of the amount of heat and flavor to balance in an already flavorful, bitter, impactful, hoppy beer is an extract of habanero vodka, essentially. And what I do is I soak the habanero in vodka to sort of sterilize it and also extract that, you know, all of that capsicum, the hot stuff, that hot chemical that I can never pronounce properly. And that vodka extract, you know, which after 3 or 4 days of soaking with the habanero is pretty darn lethal. You know, 10 drops of that or, you know, a proper predetermined amount, that'll do it for you. So similar to the same hibiscus kind of idea. Again, you create the extract, add as needed.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is Chris and I made a rosemary Belgian brown for a friend's wedding. And we added rosemary at flame out, but then we also made a rosemary infusion with vodka mm-hmm. as well. And I will tell you, we added that at kegging, and it was absolutely wonderful because that vodka infusion just captured the freshness, aroma, and flavor of the rosemary that nothing else really could. Yeah. And I think that's just something to kind of throw out there. We can explore
this.
And
you get a lot of flavor without very much. So you're not adding a lot of alcohol content. No. Of, right. You're not making your beer strong or effusively.
Drew Beecham is another guy, you know, a home brewer that some of you may have heard of. He does this sort of thing as well. He's got a shelf of, you know, funky extracts.
And also I think it's the best way to add that fresh aroma for sure. I mean, it's amazing.
This is awesome, by the way. This beer is
thank
red.
You. And the other thing, it is. This is like it's a really beautiful kind of rose hibiscus color, which I think is another benefit to doing
it. It looks like Christmas. It makes me happy.
So as I said, we just moved. So we we probably can't put our hands on this recipe right away, but if we find it, we're going to put it, we're going to post it, or once we find it. It's a very easy, but
it's a smash.
Yeah, it's a smash with hibiscus. And we can talk more about using infusions and teas at a later show.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks to Zach Kinney and the New York City Homebrewers Guild.
Ferment about it.
And again, if you are in the New York area, please stay tuned for Pour to Restore, P-O-U-R to restore.com. And check out the new brew kits from Brooklyn Brew Shop. We want to give special thanks to our producer, Jack Inslee, and Joe Galaga. Galarraga, our engineer. Thanks, dude. And we'll see you next time on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.